Welcome, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Today, we're going to be looking at the Environmental Protection Agency under President Trump. Last Thursday, agency administrator Scott Pruitt resigned after months of allegations and investigations of workplace retaliation, wasteful spending, and self-dealing. Immediately following Pruitt's resignation, President Trump announced that Pruitt's deputy at the EPA, Andrew Wheeler, would step in as acting administrator, a post he assumed today. Wheeler is a veteran lobbyist for coal, uranium, and other extractive industries, and he has a background in federal environmental regulation that may make him an even more effective agent of Trump's deregulatory agenda. During his tenure, Scott Pruitt faced at least 13 federal investigations, including misuse of taxpayer funds for security and first-class travel, assigning EPA personnel to find him housing and to help his wife get a job, and demoting or sidelining EPA employees who questioned his actions. Most recently, an agency whistleblower told CNN that Pruitt and his staffers would regularly scrub his daily calendar of meetings or calls with industry representatives or other people who might be considered controversial. As important as the scandals is how Pruitt changed the way the EPA did or stopped doing its job of environmental protection. Encouraging climate change denial, rolling back rules on clean air and water, helping delay research findings about threats to public health, and weakening the role of science in EPA decision-making. And this is where there's likely to be more continuity between Scott Pruitt and Andrew Wheeler and whoever will follow him as EPA's permanent chief. And that's what we'll dive into today with some great guests. We are joined by Michael Mann, distinguished professor of atmospheric science at Penn State, director of the Penn State Earth System Science Center, and he's the author of four books, including his most recent, Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. Michael, always good to have your sane voice here on Your Call.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
And from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Rebecca Lieber, who covers environmental politics and policy in Mother Jones, D.C. Bureau. Welcome back to Your Call, Rebecca.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Great. And later in the hour, we'll be joined by Marianne Lavelle, who's an award-winning reporter at Inside Climate News. And, of course, we also want to hear from you. If you have questions about the Trump administration's environmental policies, the campaign of deregulation at the Environmental Protection Agency and elsewhere, or about Scott Pruitt or his replacement, Andrew Wheeler, we welcome your calls. 866-798-8255 is the number. That's 866-798-TALK. Last week, President Trump tweeted that the future of the EPA is bright. What do you think? And what do you want to know? 866-798-8255. You can also email us at yourcall@kalw.org. So, Rebecca and Michael, first let's just start with the big news from last week. You know, after months of speculation, all these different scandals and investigations, finally it was announced. Donald Trump put out the tweet saying that he's accepted Scott Pruitt's resignation. Why now? Rebecca, let's start with you.
Well, it seemed like these scandals just built and built until they got to the point that Pruitt was losing key allies, and Republicans increasingly in Congress were signaling that they had grown frustrated with Pruitt. His greatest ally in the Senate, James Inhofe, even suggested recently that he should cut it out with the scandals. So it seemed like just the amount built until the point where Pruitt had lost enough favor among key White House officials as well as allies in Congress. There was no sign of this stopping as the House Oversight Committee was investigating his flights and expenses, and that was where some additional reports have started to come out with whistleblowers and EPA employees detailing even more scandals that we hadn't heard about. So the timing, I guess it was a slow week. A lot of us have been on the Pruitt watch for a while, waiting for this kind of decision to happen. I was not too surprised, but there was nothing, I guess, special last week that seemed to be the last straw.
Just the holiday week may be a good time to bury some news. Michael Mann, anything from your perspective you'd add to why Scott Pruitt went when he did?
Yeah, I think there actually was a precipitating event, that there was sort of a straw that did break the camel's back, as Rebecca very nicely outlined. There were all these mounting scandals, but somehow Pruitt was able to sort of weather the storm, as it were. He was going to keep that position as long as those who put him in that position, which isn't Donald Trump, basically it's the Koch brothers. He was sort of hand-selected by the Koch brothers, and there was sort of an understanding between the Trump campaign and the Koch brothers when it came to who was going to be appointed to key positions within, you know, agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, which are very much, they figure into the Koch brothers' sort of deregulatory agenda. And so my view is that he was going to stay in that position as long as the Koch brothers felt that he could be effective and could continue to advance their agenda. And what did happen last week, sometimes, you know, change can be, it can result from the actions of a single individual. And one very brave young woman, Kristen Mink, who's actually a school teacher, and confronted, some of your viewers may have seen this, it sort of went semi-viral, confronted Scott Pruitt at a diner where he was eating, and with her child in hand, basically calling him out for selling the future of our children and grandchildren through his agenda of environmental deregulation and destruction. And I think that one moment, that was a galvanizing moment, it did go viral, and I think it was the straw that sort of did break the camel's back, and within 48 hours he was gone.
So some citizen action may have pushed Scott Pruitt over the edge. Well, actually, we'll post a link to that at yourcallradio.org. Of course, so much, I mean, Scott Pruitt's tenure as head of the EPA is one of those ones where simply the scandals and the improprieties are enough to take up a full hour, and they already have taken up many hours on public radio and elsewhere. So in this hour, we want to focus more on the actual environmental policy that he carried out as head of the EPA, the impact that it's had on the agency, and what that's going to mean going forward. Maybe each of you could just take a moment to say, if you were going to talk, you know, if you were stopping somebody on the street and you say, here's the two most important things Scott Pruitt accomplished, or at least, you know, began to accomplish from his perspective, from perhaps that Koch brothers deregulatory perspective, what would you point people to? It's like, here really shows you what he's all about. Let's start with you, Rebecca.
Yeah, I would actually start with what he's done to science at the agency. He is, the EPA is in the process of proposing a regulation that bars lots of public health research from being used when the EPA puts forward these public health regulations. And this has massive implications. I think your program has talked about this specific issue before, and that's just one example of how Pruitt and the Trump administration has shaped how science is used and basically picking what already kind of forms this worldview and the Koch deregulatory side. That is has a lot of implications, long-term implications for the EPA and how it comes to science, how it uses it to then decide what regulations are strong enough. Wide-reaching effect.
Give us the specifics of this change in what kind of science would be included and how it actually works. You know, this is a regulatory agency, so those details are important.
Great, yeah. I'd love to go into the details. So this is basically the culmination of a long push by folks like Lamar Smith of the House Science Committee, arguing, so Republicans and industry interests arguing that studies that rely on medical records where the data can't be published due to privacy concerns, that this is somehow faulty science, and that this their talking point is usually this is secret science, and that this is a matter of transparency to require all the research that the agency uses has to be public. The problem in that sounds great as a top line, yes, it doesn't want transparency in science, but the problem when you get into health research and the major study that is associated with this that would be barred under this proposal is the Harvard Six Cities study that forms the basis for EPA air pollution regulation and ozone requirements, showing the correlation between the health effects of populations and city pollution. So I believe it was a few months ago that Pruitt proposed a draft regulation that is undergoing a public comment period now. I would expect his successor to just pick up where Pruitt left off. And that's just the beginning of a larger attack on science at the agency. And you also see, you asked me for two examples of how Pruitt changed the agency, and the other one I would say is how he's driven out this massive amount of expertise on staff. He's driven out hundreds of scientists, hundreds of longtime experts, and EPA employees describe it as a hollowing out of the agency, that even when a future administration takes over, and if they try to put the EPA back on track, they would be dealing with a very hobbled agency.
So is that a matter just of people being so demoralized, like we can't have, I don't want to be associated with what this agency is becoming, or is it really an active attempt to drive people out?
I mean, it's probably a mix, but I think one thing that they've done are aggressive buyouts and budget cuts at the EPA. That's a lot of this predates the Trump administration. The EPA's budget has been cut significant amounts since the George W. Bush administration. So this has been going on for years. Of course, demoralized staffers who are near retirement, I've talked to people who have decided to accelerate that or take a buyout when they might not have otherwise, just because they're in this really awful environment where your top boss is saying bad things about your work publicly. Just imagine working in that space. But it's also that Pruitt especially, he wasn't interested in expertise on stuff. A lot of the reports that came out when he would formulate his deregulation, new regulations, he was listening to industry lobbyists while EPA career experts went ignored. And that also adds to the demoralizing environment that they're in. I'm not sure how much that'll change. Long term, it means that the EPA is not hiring. It would have also just a recruitment problem in trying to attract young, talented, smart employees. It's a hard case to even fill those jobs right now.
That's Rebecca Lieber, a reporter covering environmental politics and policy for Mother Jones and its D.C. Bureau. Also joining us on today's Your Call One Planet series, where we are focusing on the EPA under the Trump administration. Also with us is Michael Mann, a leading climate researcher, professor of atmospheric science at Penn State. Michael, I'm sure you would echo some of Rebecca's points about, you know, the kind of top-line things about what you would say to folks about the impact of Scott Pruitt's EPA, but particularly from a scientific perspective, as someone who's one of these practicing scientists, talk about what you would put forward to people. It's like, hey, this is how things have changed over the past year.
Yeah, well, I think Rebecca did a very nice job of sort of detailing the various ways that under Pruitt, science has been pushed aside within the EPA. And, of course, I am a climate researcher, climate change is one of those areas where they've basically reassigned people who are working in that area to other areas. So imagine, you know, you've spent your life working on understanding certain aspects of the science and its implications for the environment. You've focused on the issue of climate change and the role of various solutions, decreasing carbon emissions, focusing on alternative energy. Anybody who was working within that area, within that sphere in the EPA, was basically reassigned to something that they probably didn't know very much about. They probably weren't very interested in. They were asked to leave aside their life's work, basically, career scientists. And so I think it does lead to a morale problem when people are basically told that they can no longer work on, you know, the science that they have been focusing on throughout their careers, and are randomly assigned to some other area where they don't necessarily have expertise, and don't have the passion that they would have pursuing the science that you know, that their career really was built on. So that's, you know, obviously the more they can push science aside, if you get rid of the objective voice of science and scientists within the various advisory boards, within the EPA, you get rid of all the scientists, then who's left? Of course, it's the industry lobbyists. It's the very people whose bidding Scott Pruitt and the Trump administration are trying to do. It's literally, you know, the fox guarding the hen house, weaponizing the EPA. So rather than doing what it was designed to do, which was to protect the environment for the people, it is instead geared at eliminating environmental protections for the benefit of the powerful special interests, fossil fuel interests, and other polluting interests who fund you know, the Republican Party, who fund many of these individuals. You know, Pruitt, of course, had close ties with the Koch brothers. Andrew Wheeler, who is now his temporary replacement, was a lobbyist for the Murray coal mine, the coal industry, and he was a staff member for James Inhofe. This is the senator from Oklahoma who has declared that climate change is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people, and to prove it, he came out onto the Senate floor with a snowball.
Yeah, one of those famous moments
in Washington, D.C., as if that disproves 200 years of basic scientific research. So that's the problem, and the problem, of course, is once you get rid of the science and you're simply doing the bidding of industry lobbyists, they're the only ones who have the a voice in this process. What happens? What path does that lead you down? It leads you down the path that Pruitt has taken us in less than 2 years, despite the fact that there are all these scandals that the media has rightfully been focusing on. The real damage, the real scandal, was his effort to dismantle 50 years, a half century of environmental protections put in place by previous Republican and Democratic administrations, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, undermining that legislation which is there to protect our air and waters. Rebecca has already alluded to trying to, you know, the EPA, of course, was established by Richard Nixon, and the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts were passed under the Nixon administration. The Montreal Protocol was signed by Ronald Reagan, and cap and trade was introduced by George H.W. Bush to deal with the problem of acid rain. So it wasn't always the case that there was such a partisan divide when it comes to acting on efforts to preserve the environment. But what's happened now under the Trump administration and under Pruitt and the heavy influence that industry now has within the administration, the impact, the influence they've had in who's selected to lead the EPA and other agencies, they have managed to basically now make environmental protection a purely partisan issue where, you know, they are against it. They are against preserving the environment. They are against the very thing that the EPA was designed to do.
So Andrew Wheeler, who took over today as the acting administrator, he actually started as an EPA staffer. That was where his, you know, if you look way back in his resume. Talk a little bit about just what you see about, you know, how his development, where he kind of came into that, and then the role that he's played up till now, stepping into this role, and how, what, you know, if not in substance, in style, he might be different than Scott Pruitt, Michael.
Sure. I think he's actually likely to be more effective because Pruitt, to some extent, you know, I think that his agenda was impeded somewhat by, you know, this sort of constant drip of scandals that, you know, at the very least attracted media attention, focused, you know, put more focus on him and some of the things that he was doing to undermine environmental protections. I think to some extent that made him less effective than he otherwise would have been. And ultimately, it got to the point where I think the polluting interests, who are basically hand-selecting the agency representatives, like the EPA administrator, decided that, you know, Pruitt probably could no longer be effective in advancing their agenda. And here waiting in the wings was Andrew Wheeler, who's perfect, the perfect person to advance their agenda, because, you know, to the best of, you know, our knowledge, he is fairly, you know, there are no obvious scandals that he has been involved in the past. He's fairly smooth. He's a lawyer.
A little more low-key.
Who's worked for the energy industry. I think he's likely to be a more effective advocate for the deregulatory policies that have begun under Pruitt. And, of course, Pruitt, as I said, has already done a lot of damage. He's basically dismantled about a half century of environmental protections. The real danger is in the remaining 2 years plus. Wheeler can complete that mission.
Rebecca Lieber, with Mother Jones, you obviously cover environment and environmental policy. What did you know about Andrew Wheeler even before the tweet went out saying he was going to be the new acting administrator?
This is a man who is essentially a Washington insider. He has worked for Senator Inhofe. He has worked for years as a lobbyist for Murray Energy, which is a privately held coal company whose CEO, Bob Murray, is a Trump ally. He is probably, you could say, he's the leader of many of the initiatives that even Pruitt, some of them didn't touch. So one example is undertaking a review of the EPA's endangerment finding on climate change, which basically forms the legal basis for all of its climate change work, saying that climate poses a public health threat. Now, Wheeler has himself said he isn't sure about the endangerment finding, that he would, and this was before he arrived at the EPA, he argued that the endangerment finding should go. So this is someone who comes from some very conservative circles, some very aligned with industry, like, as you said at the opening of the program, natural gas, nuclear, and coal. It's possible he can do this without the same limelight as a technocrat, that he knows the agency better. He's when he was in Congress, he worked on EPA issues, so he comes in with that knowledge of how things work, and perhaps there's less kind of cult of personality that surrounded Pruitt and his own political ambitions. Wheeler does not seem to come from that same cloth. So policy-wise, though, it is hard to distinguish them. Inhofe, who is an ally of both Wheeler and Pruitt, said that Wheeler would be a fine replacement for Pruitt. And so on the policy front, they're not seen to be different at all. And I would expect things to just continue where Pruitt left them off.
Michael Mann, I know we have to say goodbye to you, but before you go, what are you watching most closely in terms of what might be coming down the pike at the EPA in terms of the kind of changes that Andrew Wheeler might be involved in driving?
Yeah, I don't see really a change in the agenda. I think that he will, as Rebecca has very nicely described, a smoother individual and a Washington D.C. insider without the distractions that to some extent have hobbled Scott Pruitt. He may be more effective in simply continuing the deregulatory policies that have already been put in place by Scott Pruitt. So people ask me, was this a victory? You know, was it important that, we finally got Scott Pruitt, this scandal-plagued Scott Pruitt, to step aside? And it's a minor victory, but it certainly doesn't really solve the underlying problem, because, as I've alluded to elsewhere, this is like the mythical Hydra. You cut off one head, another grows back in its place. You get rid of Pruitt, you've got Wheeler. you know, new boss, same as the old boss. The only real solution here, obviously, is for there to be some congressional oversight. And so when people ask me, what's the solution? The solution is it isn't necessarily targeting these individual agency representatives, because you get rid of one, a new one just pops up with the same policies. It's about restoring congressional oversight. It's about people getting out in this next election, in the midterm elections. And frankly, as David Frum, former Bush speechwriter, has said, voting for Democrats. Only a Democratic Congress will act as a check on these extremely dangerous and potentially catastrophic for the planet policies that are underway under the Trump administration.
Michael Mann is a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at Penn State, director of Penn State's Earth System Science Center, and he's author of four books, including his most recent, Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. Michael, thanks so much for joining us today on Your Call.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Also with us for the rest of the hour is Rebecca Lieber, and she covers environmental politics and policy in Mother Jones' D.C. Bureau. After the break, we're going to be joined by Marianne Lavelle, award-winning reporter at Inside Climate News. We also want to hear from you. Have you joined the conversation? What are you learning about what's happening at the EPA? What do you want to know about what's coming next about the agenda and how you get involved as a citizen? The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org. I'm Matt Martin, filling in for Rose Aguilar, and I'll be back after this break. Today we are talking about the state of the Environmental Protection Agency in the Trump administration. Last Thursday, Scott Pruitt stepped down as administrator of the EPA, and he has been replaced, at least on an interim basis, by Andrew Wheeler, who has a background working at the EPA, but also as a coal and uranium industry lobbyist and someone who worked on the staff of James Inhofe, probably the just the biggest proponent in the Senate of climate denial. And so we are talking about the state of the EPA and what is coming up next. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today on the Your Call One Planet series. With us on the line from Washington, D.C. is Rebecca Lieber, who covers environmental politics and policy for Mother Jones. And joining us now is Marianne Lavelle, who's an award-winning reporter covering environment, science, law, and business for Inside Climate News. Marianne, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Glad to be here.
And I'm glad to see the lines are lighting up. A lot of people are interested in this transition at the EPA. And the one thing I'll say about all the coverage of Scott Pruitt, the kind of scandal side of things, I think has gotten people paying closer attention to how this agency works. And, you know, I asked both Rebecca and Michael Mann, who was on with us in the first half hour, to just point to what they saw as, like, here's the top line thing that I would say to someone on the street about what has happened to the EPA under Scott Pruitt. What would that be for you?
Well, I would say that he began I kind of telegraphed these blows that he and the Trump administration intended to take against just every type of regulation, especially those involving climate change. But he didn't get the job finished, and a lot of that job is going to be in Wheeler's hands. He began a lot of things on many fronts, and it was all to roll back environmental protection. We will see what direction Wheeler goes in. I agree with both Rebecca and Dr. Mann. He's likely to continue that effort, but I believe there will be some differences in his style and the look of deregulation under Wheeler.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from both of you. Do you think there's going to be two potential constituencies? Obviously, environmental organizations, who you would expect to be talking to the Environmental Protection Agency, seem like they were really frozen out under Pruitt, and also with a relationship with the media that covered the EPA. Just interested, Rebecca, maybe you could start. Do you see any change in either of those fronts under Wheeler's leadership?
Oh, wow. Media, I think it's too early to know how, if there is a break and how, so that's something I've covered, is kind of the Pruitt EPA from a transparency and front, and what there were reporters were blocked from summits, removed from press lists, called trash when they were asking questions to confirm stories. So certainly there has not been a very it's not been an easy relationship with the media. I'm curious to see what happens under Wheeler if they continue with that. Certainly Trump's base, this is a Trump strategy himself to attack the media, to undermine the reporting, and you saw the EPA implement that under Pruitt, calling outlets biased and fake. So I'm not sure if they will decide that was not essentially a great strategy in the end. One thing I thought was interesting was Wheeler has already done interviews with The Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, especially for, so under Pruitt, you would not have seen an interview with The Washington Post. So that's a break for, from the media standpoint. From the environmental stakeholders and kind of broadening the outreach beyond industry, which was the big Pruitt emphasis, we maybe, who knows what they'll do. I haven't seen any change yet, but at the end of the day, Wheeler has made clear he comes from this background. He has said in this Wall Street Journal interview that he there will not be a break from Pruitt's policies and the Trump administration. So I'm not sure even if he broadens the reach that it will effectively mean anything in the end in terms of moderating what they're doing at the EPA.
Marianne, quick thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that the interview Wheeler gave with the Washington Post in particular was just such a dramatic break from what Pruitt was doing, which was just playing completely to the right-wing media. I mean, releasing regulatory plans through the Daily Caller and just using what he considered friendly media and blocking out the mainstream media, which you know, he viewed as hostile. So I don't think that really, as far as substance, is something that shows a different direction under Wheeler. The thing I think to watch for under him is what he does with some of these regulatory decisions where much of the industry felt Pruitt was going too far or taking things in a direction they just didn't want to go. Pruitt was playing to a very specific a segment of industry and kind of the right wing base with what he was doing. So for example, the fuel economy standards, that's going to be a really important decision which way to go on that. Pruitt was ready to have a full-fledged war, really, with California, which always, since the 1970s, has been allowed under law to have more stringent clean air standards because California was ahead of the rest of the country and continues to be. So the Congress really enshrined that in law. Well, Pruitt wanted to undo what was in place for 40 years. The auto industry did not want to take that on. They asked Pruitt repeatedly to come up with an agreement with California, and I suspect that Wheeler will try to go in that direction, come up with an agreement that the auto industry likes. I'm not saying that it'll be great for climate or great for fuel economy, but it will be something more palatable, a little more of a veneer of doing something about fuel economy rather than just having a full front frontal battle over it for years.
That's Marianne Lavelle. She's an award-winning reporter at Inside Climate News. Also with us on today's Your Call, One at Planet series is Rebecca Lieber, who covers environmental politics and policy in Mother Jones, D.C. Bureau. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar on today's show. And we welcome you to join the conversation at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And I want to bring in a couple callers now. Let's first go to Bill in San Francisco. Bill, what's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for the having me on. I think people really, everybody, all your listeners should read Dark Money by Jane Mayer. It details just how everything that we're seeing in the Trump administration, a lot of it's coming from the Koch brothers and all their billionaire buddies. They're incredibly sophisticated in political campaigns and what they're doing, and they're running against we have Pelosi and Schumer who are just completely clueless and really desperately need to get out of there as soon as possible. It's unfortunate Pelosi can't be defeated in San Francisco, but unfortunately the Democratic Party won't overthrow her, and the same thing with Schumer. These two are just disasters for the Democratic Party, and until the Democrats start winning elections, the Koch brothers are going to rule this country. It's not coming from Pruitt. It's coming from the Koch brothers. And I don't know if you guys heard what the Koch brothers were doing around the country. They were targeting all cities that wanted to install train systems. Any area that wanted to put a train in their area, the Koch brothers would kill it. These were systems that the politicians weren't in favor of, the people were in favor of. So, it's all coming from them. People need to read Dark Money.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that, pointing folks to Jane Mayer's great reporting in Dark Money and elsewhere. I want to go next to Viren in Emeryville. Viren, welcome to the program.
How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Hear you good. Go ahead.
Okay, I also read Dark Money. I got to say, you just finished it. By Jane Mayer?
Yep.
And I've been into motorsports for a long time, race cars. I'm in a trucking business. I invented a new kit to eliminate the diesel engine in big, heavy trucks. It was okay by air quality management. In fact, I got a grant for the thing.
Okay.
But these people don't understand. The media is really dictating to people in the wrong direction. When Scott Pruitt got in there, he fired 17,000 of those people on EPA because they were dictating and in bed with the manufacturers of the test equipment for smog. And all of a sudden, the machines are being sold, but people are not talking about the mess and all the expense for each individual auto repair shop or smog shop to pay for this stuff. It was a joke. And so Scott Pruitt came in and started cleaning that mess up. And these people are crying because they have PhDs, and they should be going to work at the McDonald's because they're as effective as they are with their PhDs, and they would be when they can work for McDonald's, it would be better.
Viren, I want to get a response from our guests. So, Viren's talking about what the impact of federal regulations is on small businesses, and also talking about his experience of trying to come up with a device that would reduce emissions, and feeling like actually a Scott Pruitt leadership makes something like that more possible than it would be otherwise at the EPA. Don't know where you want to step in on any of that, but Rebecca, you want to start with us?
Right. I think Pruitt came in, there was a lot of talk, or his favorite line was how he's now listening to everyone and listening to states, and that was what was driving his policies. I think all the details since have shown that a far more complicated story, that it wasn't Pruitt soliciting ideas or looking at all of the possible options. He came in listening to a very small subset of political interests, namely ideas that came out of the Heritage Foundation had a lot of ideas, and Heartland Institute, which is a climate denier think tank, and taking these policies that have floated around for years and putting them in place, in some cases very in ways that might be very legally tenuous. Quite a few regulations that he's tried to take off the books, courts have already walked that back. So there's lots of perspectives on what the EPA has done over the years, and if it has gone too far on certain rules, or what can be done. But I think when you look at how he's done it, in some cases, courts have disagreed that this is even legal. I'm not sure on the specific rule the caller was talking about, but in a few cases, the courts have walked that back.
Marianne, anything you want to add?
I will say trucks are really a good example of how Pruitt was running the EPA. And Rebecca's right. The rhetoric was all, oh, I'm out there listening to you all, especially the little guys. But what really was happening under him, for example, there was one company that made this certain kind of truck. It was truck. The other truck makers did not like it. It was enabling this loophole in the pollution standards, so that if you made a rebuilt truck that, you know, basically this one company based in Tennessee was making, that you would be able to have these trucks on the road that were 55 times more polluting than normal trucks. And the impact from a climate standpoint and, you know, pollution standpoint was massive, because it was going to become just such a large portion of truck pollution on the road. Well, Pruitt was really, you know, giving in to this, that both Republicans and Democrats were against this happening. The truck industry was against this happening, but one family business in Tennessee, and it happened to be a huge political donor, wanted this change, and it was one of the last things Pruitt signed on his way out the door. I am sure that that battle is going to be fought out in the courts in the coming months.
I want to follow up on Bill's observation about Democratic opposition to what's been happening at the EPA, or, you know, environmental policy in the Trump administration as a whole. Certainly some sharp critics among Democrats who are on key committees. But do you see the Democrats in this 2018 election, actually, do you see places where these issues might matter electorally?
Yeah, I think you've already seen some cases. EPA is not usually a campaign talking point, and if it is, it tends to be Republicans saying, I'm going to roll back everything Obama did. But what's surprising is because Pruitt, these controversies captured the public's imagination, they're starting to surface in the midterms. I'm not sure with him out, maybe some of that air gets deflated over what the role it could have played in the election. But throwing out a few examples, some Republicans, more moderate Republicans in close races, they were the ones leading the calls for Pruitt to resign. Curbelo in the House, also Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania, both have close competitive races. They are more moderate on climate issues, and they were out front just saying, well, it's time for this guy to go. And Democrats also using this as kind of a leverage point. I'm not sure with him out if that that changes a bit, because the public doesn't know Wheeler yet. But I think the environment, climate change, what the Trump administration has come to stand for, certainly will be a major factor in the midterms.
Marianne, Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I will tell you, one thing I thought was really interesting was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who won the Democratic primary in the Bronx, really unseating the Democratic caucus chair, Joseph Crowley. She has a really, really strong climate platform, and I just think it's interesting, and she is not the only case. There are a few other House candidates that have really made that part of their larger package, and it's interesting what your caller said, the frustration with the older Democrats. Well, she is kind of possibly a new wave, certainly part of the progressive wing of the party, and we have yet to see how effective they will be, but certainly a stronger environmental policy is something that a lot of the new folks who've gotten into politics because of the drama of the last couple of years, this is part of what they're about.
We got an email from a listener named Howard who asks, can states pass regulations to replace those that are weakened or disappearing at the federal level? What role can the states play now, Rebecca?
We already talked about one example, which is the fuel economy standards in California, which has a waiver to pursue higher ones. That's a clear example. And in many cases, the large states like California and New York, they do set national policy, especially when it's a matter of standards that manufacturers have to comply with. They don't want to have a different set of cars for a populous state than the rest of the country, so they will meet the higher standards. So there's certainly a lot of potential for leadership on that front. And on the climate policy, which I think is a much tougher issue because this is obviously a global problem and not one that can be only solved with a few blue states passing legislation. But you do see, of course, leadership and California recently had passed a law saying requiring solar on new rooftops and aggressive renewable standards for states. All of this makes a difference and will get the U.S. closer to where it would be if we were trying to meet our Paris climate goals. But I always sound pretty negative when I talk about local action, because while there is a lot of good that local governments can do here, there is, at the end of the day, a limit to that. And the climate front, even passing aggressive state standards will not get the U.S. all the way to where we need to be in order to reduce our emissions and take very seriously that we are on track for well over 2 degrees warming and a very dangerous level of global warming. So I think there are cases where states can do a lot, but there's always that backstop where federal policy matters to set a floor where states can then build on.
In talking about the EPA today, we've been spending a lot of time obviously talking about Scott Pruitt, whatever his legacy might be, Andrew Wheeler stepping in as the acting administrator. But Andrew Wheeler may well not be the permanent administrator. Talk a little bit about who you're watching as potential people who might be permanent, and what's the process? How does it work? What's the role of Congress? What should we know about the next steps? Marianne?
Well, I can tell you that the Trump administration is not going to want to go through a confirmation battle, certainly before the midterm election. They would have very little reason at this stage to try to replace Wheeler and get a new candidate in there and go through that process. They already are going to. They have a Supreme Court justice that they're trying to get confirmed, and they only are going to have a few battles. I would say that I think it depending on what happens with Andrew Wheeler, it very likely that they may try to make him permanent. And then there are some of the folks who have assistant administrator posts also in the EPA, like William Wearham, who is now in head of the air office, and he's kind of shepherding the repeal and replacement of the Clean Power Plan. And there are a few of the lawyers who represent industry in Washington who might be potential replacements. I think it interesting that they reached out to in Pruitt, someone who was a state official of Oklahoma who was battling the EPA, and he spent his career battling the EPA. I think it's far more likely that they will stick with someone from the world that Wheeler comes from, the Washington lawyer, industry representative, lobbyist world, because of all of the, and I think that's all of the
that's part
trouble
of,
they went through with Pruitt.
That's part of Pruitt's legacy. Well, Marianne Lavelle with Inside Climate News, great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your time today.
Glad to be here.
And Rebecca Lieber, great reporting for Mother Jones, D.C. Bureau. Thanks so much for being with us as well.
Appreciate it.
You have been listening to the Your Call One Planet series. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We'll be back tomorrow when she'll be having a conversation with Steve Almond. His new book, Bad Stories, looks at what the hell just happened to our country. He says he wrote the book to keep from going crazy. He argues that democracy is being undermined by the bad stories we tell ourselves. Tune in to hear Steve Almond and think about how we might tell ourselves a different kind of story. Here on Your Call, we invite you to sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. You can also sign up for past shows there and give us a review on iTunes. Malia Hare-Razazan produced today's show. Sydney Johnson is our intern, and Kevin Vance is on the board. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call.